24 to 8 on RSN Breakfast. Michael Christian, Mick McGuan, joined by Adam White and the former Carlton coach, John Barker. G'day, boys.
Morning.
Good morning, Super Coach. I feel really quite intimidated.
You're talking to John Barker? Or?
Well, I've got a senior coach to the left and I've got a premiership assistant coach on
yes,
the right.
I'm glad you got the assistant bit in.
And then there's just Mick down the end.
You're just a hack over here.
Congratulations, Chriso.
Yes, thank you, Waddy. And now you're talking about the B-grade amateurs. Do a bit of work down at St. Kevin's.
A bit of work. I hear that you were the key difference.
Instrumental.
Instrumental.
Well, it's probably stretching it a bit, but no.
They couldn't get the job done. They hadn't been able to win a premiership. They get to finals and they choke, and they brought on someone with premiership experience, and look what happens.
Just all them up happened. Nicely.
It wasn't all easy, though, I've got to say. And for those that follow the amateurs out there, the B-grade grand final was on Saturday down at Elsternwick, and a six-goal win, northerly wind. And we were unbeaten going into the game for the year. And we're down by 43 points, kicking into the wind with Old Melburnians having another 12 minutes with the wind in the second term. 43 points down, so it looked pretty ugly at that point. But boys found a way to get over the line, so it was a pretty good effort.
They should ban football from being played at Elsternwick Park.
I agree with that.
Like the Western Oval in the old days.
Oh, it's always so windy.
One end.
Now, Chriso, just curious. The vision that I gave you a lend of during the year, did that have any impact on the boys?
Absolutely
just
instrumental.
Some of that strategy?
Absolutely instrumental. It was what we based our entire framework around, John.
Very good, yeah. Very good. But you had some good talent, though. That helps.
Yeah, we did have some good talent. Absolutely. It helped a long way. But anyway, we're not here to talk about that. We're here to talk about you because congratulations on your time in the post as Carlton coach. And I want to talk about all the positives and all the great things that happened to you over the course of the year. But just to touch on going for the full-time job, how did that pan out for you? Obviously, Brendan Bolton has been appointed the coach. Was that disappointing? Was it frustrating? Or was it, in a sense, an opportunity that you grasped and is going to really take you forward and give you great experience?
Yeah, look, the way... Excuse me, boys, the throat's a bit funny. Yeah, the way I looked at it is it was just a great learning experience for me. And look, obviously I applied for the job and, as I understand it, things were fairly close. But I know that the club's in good hands now. Bolter's a really good coach and he's going to put a good program together. But what I got out of the experience was, you know, you don't get those sort of opportunities. You don't get those sort of learnings by being an assistant coach for no matter how many years you're an assistant coach. So for me, great experience, really appreciative to the club for that. There's a lot of good Carlton people that have had to really dig in this year because of the challenges that were presented to us. And I think what they're seeing now is just there's a really good roadmap for our success going forward. And it's going to take a little bit of time. The club knows where they're at. But for me, great learning experience. Very rarely do you get handed the keys to a car like that and get the chance to drive it along and learn as much as I did.
You've sat back and observed as an assistant coach. When you actually were in the firing line, in the senior seat, was there anything in particular that really took you back that surprised you with the job?
Look, it's the totality of it. There's just so much to it that you just grasp from all angles in so many ways. And, you know, obviously you've got a lot of media commitments and you got to talk to sponsors and club partners and you've got to continually manage up and talk to the board, obviously, and CEO, head of footy. And then there's a little thing you got to do too, and that's coach. So, and you find... I think modern football now is about your relationships and your ability to connect with players. And it's not about being best friends, but it's about having that connection so that you can garnish as high performance as possible. And you just can't lose that connection, and that's where your time management becomes critical. But I guess one of the bigger things I also learned was that those connections are critical, and to be able to take over and to get that sort of response from a playing group just sort of showed me that my investment in those players over a period of time has impact on performance. So that was a great learning for me.
I reckon one of your great assessments from where I sit from afar, John, was your ability to turn the year around of Mark Murphy. You seem to manage him magnificently. You put him back to where he plays his best footy through the middle of the ground. Did you see that as a win?
Yeah, look, I did, and that was a number of people helping Murph, and I think what you do when one of the big things with players is their belief systems. Mm. You know, it's like, you know, both been really good footballers, and you understand that when you feel good about yourself, you play good footy, and when you're not feeling so good, it's hard. And when you get that a good environment around you and good people that show that belief, it helps drive your own belief in yourself. And you know, his leadership was outstanding. He played some really good footy, and I reckon that helped lead us to a high level performance as well.
I reckon, in summation, John, correct me if I'm wrong, there's three pillars that I believe are so important to good coaches: man management, your playing stock, the communication aspect, feedback is failure is feedback sometimes, and people have got to hear that, but also you've got to focus on the positives, what they do well. I reckon too many times we focus on what they can't do rather than what a player can do. And the other important aspect is to teach the game. Do you see it that way?
Yeah, look, I mean, it's a great way to look at it. In terms of man management, I see your ability to be honest with them as a key criteria, and because when they lose trust in you, they lose trust in your message, and that's a bit about what you're talking about in terms of communication.
Yep.
Every conversation you need to have with them, and I had some fairly strong conversations with players, but the fact that they were honest, they could cop it on the chin. And the fact that I had empathy and I had belief in the majority of the group means that they'll accept it. But all your messages have to have a team first sort of basis, because if you're having a conversation that's about someone's priorities other than what's best for the team, then it's the wrong conversation to have.
It's in conflict, isn't it?
Well, absolutely. So when they know it's about the team getting better, then they can accept it, as long as you're being honest with them.
Can I ask you about that whole balance between wanting to win as many games as you could or be as competitive as you could, as you're sort of, it was almost like a job interview, the 12 or so weeks, and doing what was best for the football club? Because I think most people from the outside were saying, gee, it's almost selfless what you were doing, because you were trying to give players an opportunity that weren't getting an opportunity. It was more about what the football club needed as opposed to what John Barker needed.
Yeah, look, those thoughts come in your head. You think, you know, perception from outside is that we're probably going to undermine our ability to win by making some decisions, some of the harder stances on standards. And you know that if you lose games, that's going to reflect on you as a coach. But I just didn't think we were in the position at Carlton to waste half a season of football. And you waste periods of time when your culture's not right and you're not living an elite sort of existence with your environment, then all you're doing is hurting your future prospects and your ability to become a good team. So for me, there was no question in it. There was people that had said to me, you know what, that's going to undermine your ability to win, and that's going to reflect on you, and maybe it's going to make it harder for you to get the job. But my conversations with the club were continuously about, I'm not wasting half a year here, I'm trying to make this a better club going forward, and that was my priority, because if I tried to band-aid and win a few games, then we're in a worse position right now than we are having stood for something along the way.
Johnny, I've been critical about the Carlton list, and when you get an icon of Carlton, David Parkin, coming out and questioning the list as well, do you see any light at the end of the tunnel with the Carlton group that they've got now, right now? I know there's been four D listings, a couple of rookies, one B grade category rookie as well, and then you've got the retirements of Juddy and Carrazzo and David Allard and Lockie Henderson's left. They've got some work to do from a list management standpoint. Do you agree?
Yeah, absolutely. There's no doubt about that, and I think the Carlton people understand that. Look, we've got some real good core group of players that I think we can build around, but our depth was quite clearly shown up in the second half of the season. Once we started losing some of our senior, more experienced players and some of our better younger players, we got a really good look at where the second half of our list is at, and it's not at AFL level. So I don't think there's any, I'm not, you know, selling any secrets there. We know that we've got a fair bit of work to do I know that when Brisbane won, you know, a couple of weeks to go in the season, that Soss was doing cartwheels down the hallways at Carlton. Obviously, we were disappointed to have lost our game, but look, there's no doubt we need to bring some talent through the door and add to some of the younger, that core group that we've talked about, where we're starting to see some really nice green shoots. I know we've talked about Bucks, Cripper, Nick Graham, Sam Docherty. We've talked about those guys in here quite a bit, and what we need to do is just build around those guys.
All right, Johnny, we'll pause there. We'll take a break and come back. John Barker and Adam White with us right through until 8.30. It's 13 to 1. 9 to 8 on RSN Breakfast. Now, our special guest is John Barker, Adam White with us as well. And Whitey, might turn to you and get a sense of where we are with the coaching merry-go-round. Of course, Adelaide and Essendon still looking to appoint coaches.
Okay, so the latest at Adelaide is that my belief is that neither John Worsfold or Scott Camporeale will be senior coach of Adelaide next year. They've already started to look at their options. I feel a bit weird talking about this with John next to me, because hopefully he's in the mix with both clubs. But as I said before, I don't think John Worsfold will be at Adelaide. My belief is that he will be in Melbourne in some capacity, whether that be senior coach, whether it be director of coaching at Essendon. I still think there's a very strong chance that he could end up at Carlton as a director of coaching. There's a link between Neil Craig and the Blues. And I think that's got a lot to do with the relationship that Stephen Trigg had with Neil Craig at Adelaide.
He's already been spoken to by the Blues.
He's been spoken to, absolutely. Yeah. But as I said before, I think Carlton would be derelict in their duties if they didn't look at John Worsfold, who has been at Carlton in the past. So I just think that at the end of the day, John Worsfold won't be at Adelaide, and a lot of that's got to do with family reasons. And Scott Camporeale, I don't think he wants the job passionately enough to put his hand up, and they've already started interviewing some other candidates. I know Adam Kingsley over the weekend was interviewed. Scott Burns has been interviewed. So the Crows are going through that process. So it's very much not a situation where they're so happy with what Campo did that he would get the job.
What about Don Pike?
He's definitely been someone that's been spoken about. So I think Don Pike, and again, it's all about who wins the process. So I can give you 15 names, but at the end of the day, it's who performs well through the interview process that gets the job. So Adelaide wide open as far as I'm concerned. The Essendon one is interesting because obviously the Bombers have been very keen to at least get John Worsfold to do the process. I think it's really important to stress the fact that they have not offered John Worsfold the job. What they are doing is they really like the idea of John Worsfold coaching the football club, but they want to get him to do the process because they need to be convinced that John Worsfold wants to coach. He wants to do the really hard work that's required at Essendon.
Will John Worsfold do that? Will he buy into that process, or will he sit back and say, well, look, my record's there?
No, I think he'll buy into the process. Okay. Yep. I think he'll buy into the process. So, look,
and where does Guy McKenna fit into that mix?
Well, Guy McKenna is an obvious link to John Worsfold because they're very close friends. They've played a lot of footy together. And I think Guy McKenna likes the idea of going to a football club as a senior assistant coach, whether that be Essendon, or there's a couple of other clubs that are still looking for assistant coaches. So I think he'll get back into the system next year. It's just a question of where he'll be. But it won't be necessarily as senior coach. And Essendon, you know, they've done a very good job, the Bombers, because while all the attention's been on John Worsfold, they have interviewed a lot of candidates. So they are doing, while it might not appear that way, they are doing the process very strongly, and I'm sure that they'll come up with the right choice.
JB, for our Carlton listeners and supporters, members, sponsors, will you be a part of the coaching panel at Carlton next year with Brendan Bolton?
Oh, look, things are looking reasonably positive there. I've looked at it, and I spoke to you guys earlier about the fact that I think that, you know, I know Bolts is going to set up a really good program. So for me to be a line coach or to want to be a line coach somewhere else, I don't probably see the point in doing that if I can be part of a really good program here and keep learning and growing in an environment where I've got some good relationships with players and help Bolts get some good traction with that. So it hasn't been finalised yet, but we'll be talking about that over the next week or so.
Talking about relationships, you had a fantastic relationship with Chris Yaron. What went wrong with his footy this year?
Yeah, look, I think there was a lot of talk about him being traded early in the piece, almost halfway through the season, and it really impacted his ability to perform. We talked about belief and that connection, and if you don't feel that connection, it makes it hard to play. And he lost a little bit of belief in himself, and so look, it's a tough one because he has been such a good Carlton person, but my understanding is he's asked to be traded, and I wish him all the best.
What will Carlton get in return? Is he a first rounder?
Oh, he's absolutely a first rounder. He's one of the most talented players on our list, and he was drafted as a first rounder.
Can I ask you, John, about that whole thing with, we've spoken about this a lot in the last few weeks at Carlton, about now it is going to be a long process for Carlton to be successful again, because you are going to go about it the right way and build from the bottom. Selling that to the senior players, that a Mark Murphy, a Bryce Gibbs, a Cade Simpson have been wonderful servants of that footy club for a long period of time, knowing that the next 3-4 years is going to be tough. How do you actually get them to buy in? And, you know, Lockie Henderson sort of looked over the fence and thought he wants to have a fresh start. How do you get that buying for the other senior players?
Well, I think it's the little bit what we talked about before. It's the honest conversation. Look, the club hasn't got it right over a period of time. Do you want success? Yes, we do. Okay, well, this is the best way of going about it. And we can't continue to try and have shortcuts along the way. And once they understand that, and they understand that the process and the steps and the roadmap that's in place is going to give us our absolute best chance, then they buy in. And someone like Bryce Gibbs, he's 26, so you'd think he'd be part of that next period. So, and you think there'd be some emotional nourishment in helping build something like that as well, and being part of it and helping drag some of those younger players along, some of the talent that we're going to walk through the door along.
JB, looking back, was the Lockie Henderson decision right to part company at the time? And the next question, the extension of that is, if you were playing finals, would that same decision have been applied?
Look, was the decision for him to walk right? Maybe. My opinion on guys who are thinking about leaving a club is, when you sign a contract, deliver on the contract. That's my opinion. And he wasn't delivering on his contract. His performances suggested that. Did he have the capability to do that? We know he did. Was the pressure of the decision and all those things impacting him? Probably was. We saw that with Eddie Betts the year before. But my opinion is, when you sign a contract, deliver on it. And we had to stop playing him anyway, because his performance wasn't giving us...
What about training and work ethic and his preparation? Did that drop off as well?
No, his preparation was fine. His training was fine. It's just that on game day, he just played a little bit paralysed, and there was obvious reasons for it. And we just... and we know he's going to go out and play some really good footy for Geelong next year, which is the disappointing thing, because it obviously impacted the way he went about things. But we couldn't keep playing because he just wasn't giving us the output that we required.
20 past 8 on RSN Breakfast. Michael Christian, Mick McGowan, Adam White, and the former Carlton coach. Look, I don't like saying that, John, because I'm sure you're going to get another opportunity. John Barker is with us and talking all things football. It's been an intriguing and insightful conversation up until now, but I want to focus on the big preliminary finals, both to be played in Perth, Whitey, and certainly going to be interesting, particularly with team selection. Will Jack Gunston, for a starter, come up for Hawthorn? And what will Fremantle do on Friday night? Will they play Ryan Crowley?
I don't think they will play Ryan Crowley. I think there's been too much made of Crowley to Mitchell. Last time Fremantle played Hawthorn, Crowley actually played on Isaac Smith and Bradley Hill. So I don't think that he'll come in personally. The issue with Fremantle is Luke McFarlane, who's going to miss, it looks like. So that's a huge blow. He might not play again this year.
He might not play again ever.
That's exactly right. So the Dockers are fairly settled based on what team they put out against Sydney. Hawthorn, Gunston, they've got to make a decision pretty early because it is a Friday night game and it is in Perth. The feeling in the rooms after last weekend was that he was 50-50, maybe 60-40, but they kicked 21 goals without him. And I know he's kicked over 50 for the season, but you just wonder whether they'd just give him an extra week and back themselves in to win. so that he's ready to go and he's 100% for the final, for the grand final. So that's the only issue with Hawthorn. The other one, North Melbourne, Drew Petrie got that really bad cork with that incident with Gary Rowan. But apart from that, the Kangaroos are healthy. Robbie Tarrant will come back and play this week.
I couldn't believe they were saying it was a cork. The physio wasn't structurally looking at his medial ligament.
I think there's a big...
He would have had a scan.
Drew actually had a couple of incidents through the match. You might remember he hurt his knee earlier on in the game in a marking contest on the far side of the ground. So, I think he'll get up, but I don't think he'll necessarily be 100%. Robbie Tarrant tweaked his groin in the warm-up. He'll come back into the team. Daniel Wells is working really hard to be available.
Gee, that's a massive call,
isn't it? I doubt very
it?
Much that he would play. And from a West Coast point of view, they're the interesting ones to me because they've got four or five that had a few problems, like Luke Shuey's in a moon boot, which doesn't mean a lot because it just means they're just trying to keep weight off the foot. But you've got Marston, you've got Pritis, you've got McGovern. Really important players have not had the ideal build-up going in. And the only thing I'll say, and we'll talk about it more on Thursday, North Melbourne beat West Coast at Subiaco last year. North Melbourne beat West Coast in Hobart this year. The last two times they've played, the Kangaroos have won. They're into this game up to their ears. Mm.
John, what are your thoughts about Fremantle? You've watched from afar. You've had a close association, as we mentioned before, with Ross Lyon. What have you made of their season? And can they produce their absolute best when it really matters on Friday night?
Look, I think they can. And they've got an ability to really restrict opposition ball use and scoring. But they're going to have to be at their absolute best to restrict Hawthorn if Hawthorn come out with their one-wood like they did on the weekend. Having said that, Adelaide played into Hawthorn's hands a bit, gave them the extra.
Birchall.
It was extraordinary. They were winning centre square clearances, handing it straight to the Hawks with an extra. You're not going to get your hands back on it again if you hand the ball to the Hawks with an extra.
Was that bizarre seeing that considering what West Coast had done the week before? And restricted that, and Hawthorn looked all at sea, that within the first 5 minutes, Hawthorn had it on its terms.
Yeah, so they're the philosophical differences that coaches go in with. Do we play our style, and that's been Adelaide's style for a period of time, or do we play to beat the opposition? And the Hawks on the MCG with that sort of width, giving them any sort of space and an extra, you're just asking for trouble, especially if they bring their A game.
Is there a two-part discussion on the back of what you just said then, John? Offensively, we're going to play our game, but defensively, the discussion is drilling it down. Is it single coverage, or really do we go to our press situation? Gap control's got to be positive, but we don't retreat. We press up, like West Coast did, deny them time on the ball.
I think you're right. The other thing about Subiaco is the skinny oval.
Correct. It's 90 metres difference.
Absolutely. It's a lot easier to press and it's a lot easier to stop transition. And what West Coast did really well is when they sent the ball in, they had great forward contest. So there was no easy ball coming out from Hawthorn, which is exactly what you need to do. And the Hawks were forced long down the line quite often because their inside options were shut down quite strongly by the Eagles.
I thought Isaac Smith said something really interesting yesterday about space and that Subiaco has quite a big ground, but it's obviously very narrow. And he was saying that you get your space north-south as opposed to east-west. And Hawthorn play with such width because they've got a game for the MCG. You saw Hawthorn kicking the ball out of bounds on the full. You saw them so many out-of-bounds situations when they had the footy, which is rare for Hawthorn because of the way they're used to playing.
It's 122 metres wide compared to the MCG, 141.
Mm.
It doesn't sound a lot, but when you're out there, it is a lot.
But I'm interested, John, in with Hawthorn, with that north-south scenario and that bubble that they talk about often with Hawthorn about getting that handball to the guy off the mark, is that if you stop that on a narrow ground, that is almost the recipe for success to beat Hawthorn.
Well, you would have seen the West Coast Eagles coming right up close to those players who were close, little post-up handballs, which get them into just a pocket of space. They gain 5, 10 metres, 60 metres. It becomes almost a 70, 80 metre play, which is that north-south distance you're talking about. But if you can restrict that, then the guy behind the mark, his longest kick's 50 metres. West Coast had their defence set up for that, and they intercepted and away they went.
Is Tabiner a must for the Dockers? I reckon they missed a bailout option against Sydney, and I think it exposed them, even though they won the game.
Yeah, look, against Hawthorn, you need someone who's going to give a strong contest, and that's exactly what happened with West Coast. They got a strong contest, but what also was important was their smalls, their ability to actually hold the ball in, create opportunities to score, but if there's no scoring opportunity, then holding it in and creating a restart and not giving that rebound that they love so much.